All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to American Vindicta. This is episode 135. And today we're going to be talking about Sasquatch, Gigantopithecus, and giant skeletons found throughout North America. Now, over the weekend, I was in the Arkansas Mountains, and a beautiful place out there, hanging out with a couple buddies of mine, and we were in search of lore. We were in search of the mysteries of time. Now, what we were after are documents that we had found in newspapers dating back to the late 1800s and early 1900s of human remains being found in caves of gigantic proportions. One of the most common ones that was found in Snowball Cave that we did visit, and that was of a woman who was 7'4". Now, I will tell you this, that the lore seems to go in the way that the Smithsonian had taken it. And ever since, many of the caves within the areas of the Ozarks have been frequented by, unfortunately, looters and by treasure hunters alike. Now, what we did was of an archaeological survey. So, what that means is we're there just looking for proof. We're not there to extract anything. So, of course, everything that we found is still left in the cave. And I would implore you that if you do have caves in your area, to go and explore them. However, and one thing me and Mono Gonzalez and some others learned this weekend, caves are extremely dangerous. And if you're a caver, I was told that there's a difference between the spelunking type and the cavers. The cavers are the hardcore guys that get sent in to save the silly spelunkers. But if you're going to be in a cave, go with an experienced guide. Go in there with the proper gear. Make sure that you have the proper medical equipment, that you have the proper transportation if you need to leave it. And I'm giving you these warnings because you'll be seeing some of the videos I'll be posting this week. It'll be on YouTube. One of them should drop tonight. And we went into some strange places and heard some very interesting tales. I don't know if they're tall tales or if they're accurate, but we're willing to go back and we're willing to find out. The problem with most of this is that we do it on our own budget. You know, even though this was an archaeological survey, even though we had an archaeologist with us, we paid for everything out of our own pockets. And, you know, many thanks and kudos goes to my good friend Brent Height of Brent Height Outdoors. That's his YouTube channel. If you've never heard of it, please go there and subscribe. He's a modern day explorer. He's a good man of God. Good friend of mine, very good brother. And we are going to have a long history of exploring the lore of Arkansas because I was fascinated when I first met Brent at Timothy Alberino's Birthright Conference. And since then, we have been talking about all the things that he has found within the areas. And I thought it shocking how much there was. Now, this area that we went into is all of the mound builders areas. And while we were excavating in some sites, doing some ground penetrating tests, you know, pilot holes here and there, we did find a couple arrowheads, what they would call points. I do have a spear point, which may date back to 300 to 500 years. And we did come across the illustrious and very rare Calf Creek point. So, according to these guys, these hardcore cavers, if you find a Calf Creek point, then you just did something that most people never do. And so that was very cool of us to be able to find that. And we obviously gave it to the old man that was out there. and you'll see him on the video. He's a hoot. He's hilarious. But we told him to keep it because that's a one-in-a-lifetime experience. And he's out there risking his life. So, might as well keep it. We were able to share the gospel. We were able to talk and interact as brothers in Christ and explore the unexplored. I didn't know much about the Mound Builders, but I knew a lot about giant skeletons, obviously. My friend Steve Quell and Timothy Alberino schooled me up very much on the lore and the facts behind the giant skeletons. So, here I am, someone with a little bit of experience, and I go out and I do my first archaeological survey, my first dig, my first find, and this is what I'll get to at the nitty-gritty. Within the area that we were in, and I was told that we are keeping this area out of existence. We're not going to talk about the exact areas that we were in for various reasons to preserve what was out there. But the areas that we were in, guys, get so remote and so dangerous at times. And you have to just know people and you have to have guides to get you into these places. We're not going, we didn't go in places where you would go and sightsee. I mean, we had to trample up and down the bush, snake infested, tick infested. I mean, every one of us were pulling ticks off of us at the end of the day. But we had to get into the nitty gritty of getting into these places, climbing up mountains just to get into these caves. And I'll tell you what, just that alone was such the experience. It was so worth it. But standing upon my first cave, I'll tell you that at first I was awestruck because I have been from Southeast Texas. I'm used to swamps. I'm not used to caves. So I stared in this giant opening of this cave, what we'll call Cave 1. And I was surprised at what I was looking at and the structures and all this. Now, this cave is where presumably the man who was guiding us, Billy found two human skulls that was in the back side of the cave, but it was another entrance to another cave. So being that it was a cave inside of a cave, we had to get there and we had to go and experience it ourselves. And Mondo, who is just as fearless as you could ever see, dove right in and with our guide. And look, guys, there's serious risk here. I mean, between cave-ins and the floor falling out from underneath you or whatever other, catastrophic event that could happen, caves are extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. So, once again, if you're going to be dumb, you better be tough because you're going to get scraped up. You're going to get in mud. You're going to hit your head on stalactites. You're going to trip over stalagmites like I did and fell down into a freaking hole. It was embarrassing, but thank God 14 years of in the military and law enforcement taught me how to fall gracefully upon my rear end. So I survived, even though I have a very nice bruise to prove I was there. You got to have a lot of light to go into a cave. A lot of flashlights, a lot of gear, a lot of communication, typically. In some places that we went to, all you needed was a flashlight and maybe a bottle of water, and you could crawl around and look. There were other places where obviously you would want to have some sort of gear in there with you. So be watching the YouTube channel, the American Vindictive Show YouTube channel, and Brent Height Outdoors. And we're going to be getting back into the caves. We're going to be talking to you, the experience of our trip through the caves. And we're going to find more because there's a secret hidden treasure in these caves. and also around these caves. There are people that lived in these caves for thousands of years. And in thousands of years, they populated these caves. They left all different types of artifacts, from pottery to weapon-making, and from weapon-making instruments from there to the tools that they used to make everything. And we actually found quite a bit of it. I was shocked at how you would just uncover a little bit of dirt and you would just see artifacts everywhere. We found all different types of cutting instruments, flint napping, stone that was so thin that you could probably perform surgery with it. That's how microscopic the blade was. And I mean deadly sharp. To this day, deadly sharp. So as you're crawling around in there, you got to be really, really careful because you can get yourself cut up. And obviously there's bats. So where there's bats, there's guano. And where there's caves, there's cave rats. Now, we didn't see any cave rats on this route, but I will tell you that my friends that were there with me who have seen cave rats say that they are quite the sight whenever you see them. They're about the size of a possum with a big long tail. So that could be intimidating, you know, sitting there in the middle of the dark. And it's only happened to me, I think, maybe two or three times in my life. But while we were in the cave, we turned off everything. We turned off the lights. We turned off the phones. We turned off all the recording devices. And we sat in complete and utter darkness. It was so dark in one of these caves that you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. So, if you are afraid of the dark, and if you are the least bit claustrophobic, stay out of caves. We were in some places where, and you know, I'm a pretty big guy. I'm 6 foot, 300 pounds. So we were in places where I had to get on my hands and knees, and I had to crawl all the way through. And you know, I probably complained a lot doing that. But man, I was laughing and having fun the entire time. And you know what made this whole trip so good, though? It wasn't the fact that there was the archaeological survey that we were doing, which was, you know, probably the second time I've ever been involved in something like that. The first time I was involved in something like that was actually back in Iraq. But being that this was the second time I ever got to do that, and we're in a place I've never been, which I love doing. I love going to places I've never been. There's a bit of danger, so of course I love the danger. You know, we're out there in the caves, we're crawling around, and it was really fun. But the thing that made it the best was that I had godly men with me. We were fellowshipping and having fun from the beginning of the cave to the end of the cave. Everybody had a smile on their face. Everybody was, you know, just thanking the Lord for the things that we're able to go out here and do. So once again, I'm a man of my word. Go out, go on an adventure. Have fun. That's an order. Your life is short. Enjoy this world while you have it. There are tons of things to do. Hey, do you like waterfalls? I climbed a quarter of a mile into a cave to find a waterfall. And these kids had a rope that was about 30 feet up, slick limestone rock. And I don't know how they got it up there. And when this inner part of this cave would fill up with water, they would jump into that pool of water. And I'm fairly certain there was another cave entrance underneath that. So the thing that I would worry about is like, man, if I wanted to go cave diving, which I'm all for it, but if I wanted to go cave diving and there's another hole in there, could that potentially suck me into it? You know, that's the real fear here. You know, there were places where I was walking around, guys, and I'm telling you, I would look down and I would just think to myself, if I slip and I fall, I'm not going to grab onto anything because there's not a handhold. And it's so slick, my legs, my feet won't gain any purchase. And I'm just going to fall until I stop falling, no matter how deep that is. And that's how people die. That's how people have to get themselves rescued. And, you know, I mean, some of these places when I was looking at it, and you'll see it in the videos. So please watch the videos. You'll see it in there that there were places probably 30, 40, 50 feet deep, straight down. And all of them were always convenient enough for a human body to fall right into it. There were plenty of places where we had to climb up stalagmites and then onto a overhang that if you fail from the overhang, you would impale yourself on the stalagmite because you had to step on the stalagmite just to climb up there. So if in terminology, okay, stalactite hangs tight from the ceiling. My buddy Brent taught me this. A stalagmite is the one that grows from the bottom of the floor. These two eventually meet each other after thousands of years. But one of the caves, and I think this was cave 3 that we were in, or cave 2, as you had to climb up this stalagmite to get on this shelf, this overhang, that is solid mud. I mean, I had to dig my hands into mud and to find handholds. Underneath it, you would slide probably all the way to your death to a unfathomed depth. All the way down. So if you didn't get impaled and you happened to miss it and you kept rolling downhill, you may not ever come back out. Especially, you're not coming back out if you're by yourself and no one knows you're in there. So if you ever go caving, make sure people know where you're at and about what time you expect to be out. And make sure that you leave markers, because if not, well, that might just be your next grave. We're going to go to a break, and we're going to talk about Sasquatch, Gigantopithecus, and giant skeletons. And hopefully I'll have the time to tell you why I was in Arkansas. I'll see you in just a second.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Okay, and we're back. So, Sasquatch. Why am I talking about Sasquatch? Well, because it's better than talking about politics right now. I think many of you are already on the up and up of all the craziness going on with the willingness of our leaders to try and disarm us with our weapons and to terrorize us. So, if you want to get into that, there are a bunch of other people out there that can give you probably better information than I can. If it's something really prevalent, I'll pop in and I'll talk about it. Be paying attention to the YouTube channel. That's where I do a lot of impromptu videos. And if there's anything really important, it'll be up there. So, without further ado, let's get into this. Why am I talking about Sasquatch? Why am I lining up a Sasquatch hunt in Oklahoma with a certain congressman you may or may not have heard of? Well, I have been in. I have been talking to a congressman out there who helped bring forth a bill that is supposed to be helping to protect Sasquatch by doing a $2 million Sasquatch hunt. Now, that hunt is for proof, not for killing of the animal or creature, whatever it is. And, you know, here comes the real question. What do you think Sasquatch is? Based off of the First Nations people lore, you know, they call him the Big Brother, the Wild Man, the Hairy Man. They say that he's a supernatural being with earthly foundations, that he can walk in and out of portals. He can make himself invisible. He can interfere with communications, that he can emit a extremely low frequency wave, an elf wave, and he can actually temporarily paralyze you with fear. Or is any of this true? Well, there's a lot of lore, and I am a hunter of lore. I want to know about the history, and I want to know about the tales, the tall tales, because within every tale, there's a bit of truth. And I believe a lot of times we'll get more truth from the lore than we will from the scientists now. Unfortunately, you have scientific expeditions that go out looking for these cryptic creatures, and then they end up destroying whatever they find or locking it away, and no one ever knows. We have probably heard about the things that the Smithsonian Institute did way back in the past with giant skeletons and other such creatures. So it's up to us to get out and do our own investigation. Now, most likely, if you go out looking for Bigfoot, you're not going to find Bigfoot. You're probably going to find mosquitoes. But occasionally, there are some real gems. But we'll get into that to another date. This is your introduction into Sasquatch and what I think Sasquatch may be. So, Sasquatch, Gigantopithecus, giant skeletons, are they linked? Let's find out. Legends of large ape-like beasts can be found all over the world. Since the 1950s, the United States version of this has been Bigfoot. And since 1976, the FBI has had a file on them. That year, Director Peter Byrne of the Bigfoot Information Center and Exhibition in the Dalles, Oregon area sent the FBI about 15 hairs attached to a tiny piece of skin. Byrne wrote that his organization couldn't identify what kind of animal it came from, and he was hoping the FBI might be able to analyze it. Now, he also wanted to know if the FBI had analyzed suspected Bigfoot hair before, and if so, what were the Bureau's conclusions? Well, at the time, Byrne was one of the more prominent Bigfoot researchers, says Benjamin Radford, which is the deputy editor of Skeptical Inquirer magazine. In 2019, a lot of people think of Bigfoot as being sort of a silly and a joke or whatever else. But in the 1970s, Bigfoot was really, really popular. That was when the $6 Million Man had a cameo by Bigfoot. This was also after Roger Patterson and Robert Gimlin released their famous video footage in 1967, supposedly showing Bigfoot in Northern California. It's worth noting that the original evidence that launched the Bigfoot craze, a trail of oversized footprints discovered in the same region in 1958, was revealed to be a prank by logger Ray L. Wallace in 2002. Many people believed the Bigfoot creature in the Patterson-Gimlin film was a costumed prankster as well. Byrne has always believed the footage was real. Now, Jay Cochran, who was the assistant director of the FBI's Scientific and Technical Services Division, wrote back to Byrne that he couldn't find any evidence of the FBI analyzing suspected Bigfoot hair, and that the FBI usually examined physical evidence related to criminal investigations. Still, it sometimes made exceptions in the interest of research and scientific inquiry. And Cochran said he'd make such an exception for Byrne. Unsurprisingly, Cochran found that the hair didn't belong to Bigfoot. In early 1977, he sent the hair back to Byrne along with his scientific conclusion that the hairs are of deer family origin. 4 decades later, the Bureau declassified its Bigfoot file analysis. To be clear, this is not evidence that the FBI endorsed the existence of Bigfoot, any more than the U.S. military's decades-long investigation of unexplained aerial phenomena, popularly known as UFOs, isn't an endorsement of the existence of aliens. However, all it means is that the FBI did a favor to a Bigfoot researcher, says Radford. There's nothing wrong with that, but it shouldn't be mistaken for a de facto government endorsement of the reality of Bigfoot. Even so, Bigfoot believers may be tempted to spin it into another direction. They love the idea that there's a smoking gun in the FBI files. See, look, Bigfoot must be real, otherwise the FBI wouldn't have taken it seriously. Well, the FBI did not send a team out filled with investigators to look for Bigfoot, but they did agree to run an analysis on 15 hairs. So, to add more layers to what is already an unusual case, the 93-year-old Byrne doesn't seem to remember receiving the FBI's response that the Bigfoot hair was actually deer hair. Because Byrne had been out of the country for several months, Cochran sent the letter to the executive vice president of the Academy of Applied Science, which was associated with Byrne's Bigfoot organization. The executive wrote that he would give Byrne copies of the correspondence when he returned. Yet, when the FBI released its Bigfoot file, which was exclusively about Byrne's inquiry, on June 5, 2019, Byrne reacted as though he were hearing that it was deer hair for the first time. Quote, "Obviously, I can't speak for Peter Byrne," says Radford, "but if you're going to make a big enough deal about this unknown specimen to give it to the FBI, then you're not going to want to publicize the fact that it turned out to be deer." That's an article that was wrote by the History Channel, historychannel.com, by Becky Little. It was wrote in January 22nd, 2020. And it just kind of makes me think, is there something soon that's going to come out about Bigfoot? Look at all the hoopla that came out over UAPs, once known as famously the UFOs, and the government's interest in it. And that the fact that the government says that they even have possession of a craft. We haven't heard anything else about that. But I do think there's a sinister reason why, because it's going to be used against us. But can Bigfoot be used against us? Well, hopefully the mighty man of the woods will be fighting on our side against the evil aliens. But until that day comes, we have to just view the evidence as we get it. Once again, the evidence as we get it. So, let's keep reviewing what evidence we have found. Now we're continuing on with another article here from the History Channel. In 1958, a journalist, Andrew Gonzale of the Humboldt Times, highlighted a fun, if dubious, letter from a reader about loggers in Northern California who discovered mysteriously large footprints. Now, supposedly, this is where the whole Bigfoot lore in America came from, or at least the most recent. Here's a quote. "Maybe we have a relative of the abominable snowman of the Himalayas," Gonzale jokingly wrote in September 21 column alongside this letter. Later, Gonzale said that he had simply thought that the mysterious footprints made a good Sunday morning story, but to his surprise, it really fascinated readers. In response, Gonzale and fellow Humboldt Times journalist Betty Allen published follow-up articles about the footprints, reporting the name loggers had given to the so-called creature who left these tracks, Bigfoot. And so the legend was born. That's where we get our name, Bigfoot. Now, there are many various wild man myths from all over the world, says Joshua Blubus, who's the author of Bigfoot, The Life and Times of a Legend. In Western Canada, the First Nations people have the Sasquatch, the supposed origin of the word Sasquatch. However, the modern U.S. concept of Bigfoot can be traced quite directly to the Humboldt Times stories in 1958. People later go back and dig through old newspapers and stuff and find scattered reports of a wild man here and a wild man there, says the author of the article. But it doesn't coalesce into a general discussion until the 1950s. Even though loggers blamed acts of vandalism on Bigfoot, Allen thought that most of them didn't really believe in the creature. It seemed to her that they were just passing along stories with a legendary flavor. Still, the story spread to newspapers all over the country, and the TV show Truth or Consequences offered a $1,000 bounty to anyone who could prove the existence of Bigfoot. Who is making the huge 16-inch tracks in the vicinity of Bluff Creek, wrote Gonzoli in one of his columns in his article in October. Are the tracks of a human a hoax, or are they the actual marks of a huge but harmless wild man traveling through the wilderness? Can this be some legendary sized animal? Now, we're going to get into some other things that are out there that could potentially be Bigfoot. And there's plenty of pseudoscience out there. Don't believe everything that you hear, kids. There are plenty of hoaxsters. And for people like me who want to find new and interesting things, but also I come at it at a very scientific and professional chance, being a former, Marine and military, and then I got, all the law enforcement. I also grew up in the woods of Southeast Texas my entire life as a hunter. So I know how to use the woods to find what I need. I think one of our problems here is a lot of these guys that are on these Bigfoot investigations and all this that you see throughout the news and on TV typically are a bunch of guys who go out into the woods for one night. And, they look around and they believe that Bigfoot is there, and every snap of every twig is Bigfoot surrounding them. I know better because I know the woods, but that's my woods. So where I don't know better is in the Northwest. In the Northwest is the highest accumulation of Bigfoot sightings in the world, at least within the United States for certain, even to the extent that the Army Corps of Engineers has identified their species. Now, you can find this at pinebaroninstitute.com. This is the cryptid history, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and Bigfoot. And when this goes out on YouTube later, I'm actually going to give you the article so that you can go and read this yourself and you can look at this awesome picture that they made. Now, in 1975, the United States Army Corps of Engineers, which is the Seattle District Environmental Resource Section, released the Washington Environmental Atlas, aka Provisional U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Environmental Reconnaissance Inventory of the state of Washington in 1975. A 114-page book that cost over $200,000 to make and over 3 years of research to compile. The Atlas contains official maps, graphs, status levels, and reports regarding phytogeography, zoogeography, zoogeography, physical geography, and the land use borders for the state of Washington. Also, included are archaeological sites, rivers and lakes of environmental interest, notable geological features, and historical and contemporary points of interest. The book went into great detail, describing the native plants of the state, as well as the native animals. Some species were even given their own individual pages, which provided even more detail than other species. One of these native creatures that were given their own page is the legendary cryptid known as Bigfoot. The official information description of Sasquatch from the 1975 Atlas is as follows. The very existence of Sasquatch, or Bigfoot, as it is sometimes known, is hotly disputed. Some profess to being open-minded about the matter, although stating that not one piece of evidence will withstand serious scientific scrutiny. Others, because of a particular incident or the totality of reports over the years, are convinced that Sasquatch is a reality. Alleged Sasquatch hair samples, inspected by FBI laboratories, resulted in the conclusion that no such hair exists on any animal or human presently known for which such data are available. Information from alleged sightings, tracks, other experiences conjures up the picture of an ape-like creature standing between 8 and 12 feet tall, weighing in excess of 1,000 pounds and taking strides of up to 6 feet. Plaster casts have been made of tracks showing a large, squarish foot, 14 to 24 inches in length and 5 to 10 inches in breadth. Report to feed on vegetation and some meat, the Sasquatch is covered with long hair, except for the face and hands, and has a distinctly human-like form. Sasquatch is a very agile and powerful, with the endurance to cover a vast range in search of food, shelter, and others of its kind. It is apparently able to see at night and is extremely shy, leaving minimal evidence of its presence. Tracks are presently the best evidence of its existence. A short film of an alleged female Sasquatch, which was shot in Northern California, which, although scoffed at, shows no indications of fabrication. If Sasquatch is purely legendary, the legend is likely to be a long time in dying. On the other hand, if Sasquatch does exist, then with the Sasquatch hunts being mounted and the increasing human population, it seems likely that some hard evidence may soon be in hand. Legendary or actual, Sasquatch excites a great popular interest in Washington. What a fascinating read, right there from the Army Corps of Engineers in the 1970s. Now, I remember talking with some security guards that we had at the federal buildings that I used to work at, and they would talk to the Army Corps of Engineers. Some of them were a bit of Bigfoot fanatics, and they would tell me that what they are told, so here's hearsay is hearsay, right? This is the lore. What the Army Corps of Engineers would tell these security guards is that sometimes they would be spooked off at their sites. Sometimes Bigfoot would go and steal their lunches or ramble through their tent area or through their cars, or would stalk them and throw large rocks at them. And from what I've read, the rock throwing is a very prominent thing. There are reports of Bigfoot throwing rocks, throwing large boulders, throwing better parts of trees at people, and doing charges at people. There is one report of Bigfoot killing three men out in the woods, I believe in California, that were near a marijuana field. This, so far from what I've gathered, remains to be hearsay. I think they're claiming that the killing of the three men and the way that it was killed was a very vicious attack upon these three people by other drug dealers. Now, you know, that could be whatever it is, but that is still the lore. So when we go through lore, we have to go through and look as much stuff of evidence that there is out there. And obviously you would know that with Bigfoot, the evidence is a mountain high. But I have some other creepy crawlies that I want to discuss with you. With such evidence as tracks, cast of footprints, blurry photos, grainy videos, and other evidence, and over 10,000 eyewitness accounts of having a Bigfoot encounter within CONUS, the continental United States, could there be a mistaken identity? Could there potentially be a creature that matches the proportions of what we know as Bigfoot? Once again, in these accounts, Bigfoot is usually described as being about 8 to 10 feet tall, which is about 3 meters tall and covered in hair. Eyewitnesses would say that they're always 1,000 pounds, which goes to tell you that a lot of people don't know how to judge size very well. And that's nobody's fault. But if you've ever seen a gorilla up close, you will see in your mind what a 400-pound creature really can look like. And gorillas are massive animals, massively strong animals. But they're not Bigfoot. Their height as they stand up will not reach 8 to 10 foot high. They don't have long legs that can make these 6-foot long strides in between each footprint. So what other creatures are out there that can roughly get close to this? Well, historically, we have to go way back in time. And I mean way, way back in time. Probably to the extent that this creature was never on the North American continent and was only residing in Asia. Scientific evidence for the existence of a modern-day Bigfoot may be proving elusive, but a giant bipedal ape did once walk the earth. A species readily identified in the scientific community as Gigantopithecus blackie was about 10 feet tall, that's 3 meters tall, and weighed up to 595 pounds, based on the fossil evidence that was found. Now, however, Gigantopithecus did not live in North America. It lived in the southeast corner of Asia, and went extinct hundreds of thousands of years ago, according to scientists. The extinct ape is also more closely related to modern-day orangutans than to humans, or our closest relatives, the chimpanzees or bonobos. Gigantopithecus is an extinct genus of ape from the early to middle Pleistocene of the southern China area, represented by one species only, and that is Gigantopithecus blackie. So it didn't have any offshoots. Potential identifications have also been made in Thailand, Vietnam, and also Indonesia of Gigantopithecus. The first remains of Gigantopithecus, which was a 2/3 molar tooth, were identified in a drugstore by an anthropologist, I'm going to butcher this man's name, Ralph von Koenigswald, in 1935, who subsequently described the ape. In 1956, the first mandible and more than 1,000 teeth were found in a portion of China, and numerous more remains have since been found in at least 16 sites. Only teeth and 4 mandibles are known currently, and other skeletal elements were likely consumed by porcupines before they could fossilize. Gigantopithecus was once argued to be a hominin, a member of the human line, but it is now thought to be closely aligned with orangutans classified in the subfamily of Pongoni. Now, I'm going to stop right there. When we hear the words presumed, thought to be closely allied to. It means science doesn't know. And scientists have such an ego problem with telling you that they don't know something, that they can't render the fact that there could be another version besides what they were told in the university, that they will willfully scoff at evidence, not look at it, or they will write off evidence to be something that it is not. Like, for example, well, probably porcupines ate all the Gigantopithecus, of course. So when we read bogus stuff like this, it's infuriating, especially for a kid like me. I just want to know. It sounds fun. Let's see if there's Bigfoots out there. But you cannot deny tens of thousands of people just within the U.S. who have had some sort of experience. They have seen something. And here we have a gigantic gorilla-like ape, potentially 400 to 600 pounds when it was alive, that was 10 foot tall, matching the same descriptions of Bigfoot. Now, I don't know how long the legs were, but if Gigantopithecus would be considered within the same reference as an orangutan, or let's say even a human, then its arms possibly were 2 to 3 feet long. And most likely, this creature's entire height from fingertip to toe would have been 13 feet tall, maybe even taller. So this is an enormous animal. We don't know how many there were. Very few things have ever found or have ever been found about this creature, but we knew that it did exist. But I will say this, just because we've only found its remnants within Indonesia and Thailand and Vietnam and here and there, doesn't mean that the creature couldn't have moved from place to place. I do believe Bigfoot exists. I do believe people are seeing something. And that is my law enforcement side coming out. Too many people, too many eyewitnesses, something has to be seen. And this is why I say it to you like this. And if you had a Bigfoot experience, tell me. I'd love to read about them. But if your eyewitness testimony is good enough to surrender someone's life in a murder trial, why is your eyewitness testimony not good enough for the scientific community to prove the existence of creatures that we may or may not know anything about? They're not going to give you the answer that you want. They're going to find excuses around it. And that's the problem with a lot of these academics. And myself, Amando Gonzalez of Prophecy Watchers, were recently talking about this along with our good friend Brent Hite about Bigfoot, about how we believe it is an actual creature. We believe people are actually seeing what they are seeing, just like how many people have saw the UFOs or UAPs and were scoffed at for years. And just recently, the FBI and then the rest of the freaking government comes out and says, oh, by the way, we were lying for 30 years. We do know about saucers and UFOs, and we may have some. So what does that tell you, guys? It tells you don't believe everything that you're being told by the scientific community and the government. Get out there and explore it and find out what you can. But I want to get into one other thing real quick. Within the Mound Builder area of North America, which is Arkansas and all that area, there are other things that are found there. And the Mound Builders are unusual. They didn't leave very much, but I was on some of the mounds. Our archaeological team were out there. We were on the mounds. I was doing different types of readings and trying to pick up various different types of magnetic fields and other anomalies that may be coming out there with a trifield meter. Not looking for ghosts, by the way. I don't care for that. I'm looking for what could have been a prehistoric civilization with metal tools. So I'm trying to find any information on that. And there were a couple instances, and you'll see it in the videos, where we were having spikes of the electric field, an anomaly, in the middle of a mound that is nowhere near power lines, nowhere near any communication devices. I was completely sanitized. I had No other electronics on me except for the trifold meter. Didn't even have a battery-powered flashlight on me. And the meter would be going off, even to the extent that I was even getting surges of voltage meters. No radio frequencies, but between the EF and the milligauss reading, I was very confused. Because I would put it down on the ground, I'd back away, and I'd try to let it get a baseline, and it could never stay on a single number. Every mound that we were on, it would just jump from 0.5 to 1, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that was within this one area that we were at. Now, that one area that we were at, it had giant skeletons on it. So we're hunting down the lure in Arkansas for giant skeletons. And we go to site after site where we have been told this is where a giant skeleton was. Here's our problem. Is by the time we get out there, the giant skeleton has been moved, or it was when the witness was typically almost always a child. So these things have, you know, taken place sometimes 40 and 50 years before. So trying to track down the evidence of whatever it is that they saw, and I do believe these people saw something, it's going to be very hard. And we have actual documents that I'm going to post in a video later, because most likely this video or this podcast is going to be turned into a video. It'll be on the YouTube channel, and I'm going to post a bunch of articles and stuff on there and pictures for you guys to look at. And there are articles from the 1800s and 1900s of giant skeletons being found, giant skulls being found, and even to the extent I did find a Native American lore book that was near the Red Indian Cave, and this is in Arkansas, I think near Clinton. And we stopped and talked to the museum curator, very nice lady, and I have the book, I'm reading the book, and I come across a couple different pages of Native American lore talking about giants, giant skeletons, slanted-eyed giant skulls that were found. And what am I to do with this? What am I to make of this? If we can't find the skeletons, and if the lore is that they were there, they were buried, they were killed by the Native American people, and that the Smithsonian now takes every single one of them that they can find and hides or destroys the skeletons. Well, guys, I'm kind of like you. I'm just stumped. What am I supposed to be able to do with it? So the only thing I can tell you to do is to chase down the lore. So if you live in an area where you have heard of giant skeletons and you want to be a part of something, send me an email. If it's good enough, I'll get in communication with you. And by good enough, I mean we have to be able to film something. And that is the problem with this. The filming is very expensive. I am currently doing reconnaissance for some of this. And everything involves money, guys. So, you know, got to make it worth your while. And I mean, even to the extent that we were crawling a mile and a half underground through a dangerous cavern to look for evidence that wasn't there, it was still worth it. Because we're after the lore. You know, and this is one of the things that I'll tell people. If you want to get into stuff like this, if you want to get into hunting for Bigfoot, go ahead and expect you're never going to see them. Just go ahead and expect it. You're never going to see them. Have your equipment ready and go out and explore the woods. Because if you go out and you explore the woods, most likely you're going to run into something that you weren't expecting. I know as a hunter, when I would be tracking deer, I always came across something that I wasn't looking for, and then I almost never found the deer. And then I'd be like, wow, I can't believe I just stumbled upon this. That's the luck of the draw with stuff like this, guys. You just got to get out there and have fun. Have a goal with what you're doing, obviously. I think the Bigfoot hunting's great. I think hunting down the giant skeletons is still something that we need to be doing, because that's hidden history. purposely hidden history. And for someone who, you know, I'm a history buff, that's very intriguing and very upsetting at the same time. So, all of you up in the Northeast, you have a lot of hidden history. If you have nothing else better to do, go to some of these archaeological sites, some of these megalithic sites. Start hunting for the lore. Stop talking to the scientist. You know, and I'll tell you why. The museum curator that we talked to, we're supposed to be doing an interview with her too. And she's great people. But she'll tell you that she searched for 30 years for archaeological stuff, for lore. And she said that the best information she ever got that put her right on the spot for, you know, petroglyphs and caves and arrowhead findings and archaeological discoveries, all that other type of stuff. She said the best place to look was walking up and down the creek and talking to all the old fishermen, or going to the old hangouts where all the old men will go and drink coffee and sit there and listen to them and try and ask the older generation, because the lore is still alive with them. And that's really what we're doing. You know, that's why if you listen to L.A. Marzulli on the trail of the Nephilim, he hasn't found it yet, but he's on the trail. And the interesting things that are in between where we want to find in the trail is what we really tried to focus on, because we're building the better picture for all of us. Right now, we have so much evidence about the prehistoric people, about the giants, about the skeletons that have been found all across the United States, about Bigfoot, about, you know, X, Y, and Z cryptid. You have to get out there. You have to experience it, as Indiana Jones would tell you. You're not going to find this sitting inside the library. You got to get out into the field. And hopefully, I can encourage a couple of you to get out there, get into the field, get a little bit dirty. Make sure you have the proper camping equipment. If you need any type of camping equipment, well, then you should already know, mountain-state-survival.com. Please visit Jeff's website. Get yourself hooked up. I can tell you this much. There's a lot of stuff that was out there that you could used to readily buy for the camping equipment, and it is steadily disappearing. It's disappearing because of the lockdowns. It's disappearing because of all the other strains that's on the economy right now. And once again, stay prepped. Stay armed. There's just already being reported another mass shooting that's happening in Maryland. So, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you pray over yourself, over your family, over your children every night. And may God keep you and protect you. Stay prepped, stay prepared, stay frosty. The enemy is out there. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about all the giant skeletons that are found around the United States. And we'll see if there's anything else around the world. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out of here. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual.
Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.